Towards the end of 1965, negotiations started with Radio Caroline, as Dorothy Calvert explains.
Radio Caroline approached my husband with the idea of an amalgamation. This was to make Radio City a booster station for the Caroline network. When I say booster, I mean that the signals would be transmitted from the ship, and then with the aid of a larger transmitter and a better aerial, the signal would be boosted to a much higher power with a much greater coverage of England from Radio City. So the terms were agreed, and the advertising revenues were pooled. Radio Caroline started looking for a transmitter, and in the end informed my husband that they'd traced one and it was going to be delivered.
They supplied a transmitter, which was flown in from America, built in 1941, I think, or thereabouts, or probably prior to that. It was running, apparently. We had a note written on it by the previous engineers that it was actually operating when Pearl Harbor was bombed. So that you can imagine how old it was. And it really was a monster. It weighed 5 tons in lumps. It then went to Holland, came out from Holland by tender. We got most of it up on the tower. I dropped one unit weighing about a ton. That went in the water, for which we were all very sorry. We had to go pick the damn thing out, get some divers down there, pick it up, clean it up and put it to rights.
As it was, this transmitter never worked, and subsequently the deal fell through. Radio London were next with a takeover bid, this time for the radio station UKGM, United Kingdom Good Music. Plans were well advanced when, on Monday the 20th of June, 1966, a boarding party took over Radio City's fort and closed the station down. The raiders were led by Major Oliver Smedley, who owned, and allegedly hadn't been paid for, the old Radio Caroline transmitter. Radio London's Philip Birch takes up the story.
UKGM was because Reg Calvert, who ran what was called Radio City from a fort, wasn't doing particularly well. In fact, he was doing rather badly, because although there was a proliferation of pirates then, in fact, most of them weren't doing well at all. The great success was Radio London, and the second great success was 390. And 390 had a sort of a middle-of-the-road sweep music format, and Radio London had a top 40. So Reg came to me with the idea that why don't we take over his fort, which was very similar to 390's, and use it for a second radio station in the sweet music, the good music category. And I thought that this would be fine, and did my sums on the back of an envelope, and it seemed to be viable, and I was pretty sure that we could put out as good a sweet music station as 390. And so we agreed to go ahead and take him over, as it were. I think he was going to cling to something like 10% of the equity, and we were going to take over 90% of it. It was that kind of an arrangement. I remember going over the facilities for his staff and being very unimpressed. I went out, you see, and I didn't like it, and the way he was, because he was doing it on a shoestring, and I felt that it ought to be done in a much more professional way. And I thought the first thing I would do would be to put in, you know, nice rooms for the staff on there to make it an attractive place to live. So I believe that we'd had some timber delivered, which was going to be the beginnings of rooms for the DJs. But we actually hadn't signed our agreement or anything of that sort. And his staff were still working on it, and it was still his Radio City. But it never came to be because his fort, I mean, this is all history now, but his fort was invaded by a couple of characters and a lot of seamen. The seamen were on strike at the time, and so they were hired to sort of take over, and they took over Reg's fort by force.
Dramatic news tonight from Shivering Sands off the Kent coast. A party of police are said to be on their way out to the wartime fort there following reports that the pirate radio station on it, Radio City, had been taken over by a boarding party.
Now, you're one of the men who came aboard. Tell me, who are you and why did you come?
Well, my name is Elf. We were engaged as riggers to report to Terry's Pier at 11:30 that night. We were coming down, as far as we knew, we were coming down to do a normal rigging job. Well, after we got well down the river, we were informed then that what we were actually for was to come aboard here and stand by and protect these people's equipment. And when...
Protected against what?
Protected. He said that it was his gear and he was going to take it ashore when he got permission from ashore people.
This is the man who hired you?
That's it.
Meanwhile, Red arrived back in London, was told that his appointment with Smedley was arranged for noon. So he went along, and there was Smedley, Kitty Black, Commander Horsley, and a Mr. Lovett. And they confronted him with the boarding party and a piece of paper which they wanted Wretch to sign, signing away 50% of Radio City profits.
Smedley, who was out in the cold, I presume, decided that he wanted a cut in the Radio City London deal. And to that end, sent out his thugs to take over the station, went round to see Reg and said, look, we've got your station, and we want half the proceeds or we're not going to let you go back on the air. Reg, of course, didn't like this. He rang me up and said, what are we going to do? And I suggested that it should be dealt with really from the source of the trouble. You know, that source, that's trouble should be dealt with. And he went to deal with it, presumably.
Stand by. Here is a Radio London News Bulletin.
Dateline, Wednesday, June the 22nd, Essex. William Oliver Smedley has been charged with the murder of Reg Calvert, the head of Radio City, who was found dead in a house in Saffron Walden this morning. Smedley was remanded in custody for a fortnight. Mr. Calvert died from a gunshot wound in the chest. The next news on Radio London is at 2:30. This is Keith Skews reporting.
At 9 o'clock on Sunday evening, the 26th of June, the boarding party left, and within an hour, Radio City was back on the air.
This is Radio City broadcasting on 299 metres in the medium wave band. And I guess you've all read in the newspapers or heard on radio or TV the events of the past week as far as the station is concerned. So there's nothing more I can say right now than on behalf of fellow DJs Tom Edwards and Alan Clark, technicians Ian West and Phil Perkins, engineers Tony Pine and Paul Elvey, it's pretty good to be back again with you on the 299.
The station continued and things started to get back to near normal. Unfortunately, this situation wasn't to last. On the 8th of February 1967, Mrs. Dorothy Calvert was charged under the Wireless Telegraphy Act.
And I was summoned by Scotland Yard under the Wireless Telegraphy Act. This act means that you cannot transmit or run a broadcasting station or a radio in England without a licence. Of course, we understood we were outside territorial waters and we didn't need one, which was proved on the one hand and disproved on the other. We were taken to court. My solicitor prepared a very good case and we proved that we were outside territorial waters and also the fact that the court was not empowered to try this case because we were on the high seas. Unfortunately, we were found guilty and my instructions had been that that night had to be the last night for broadcasting. The boys closed down. It was a very, very moving time. Very sad. We all cried. But there was it. That was the death of Radio City.
And as you've probably heard, ladies and gentlemen, our managing director, Mrs. Dorothy Calvert, was fined £100 today at Southend and has stated that she'll not appeal against the findings of the case, which means tonight, of course, at midnight, Radio City goes off the air for the last time, apparently, because we're operating within territorial waters. And during the next 60 minutes or so, through until that final hour of midnight for us at any rate, we'll be talking to all the various disc jockeys on duty at present on the station. That's Alan Clark, Ian McRae, Paul Cramer, and R.W.B. And I think that perhaps at this time you might like to meet the boys off duty, as it were, and find a bit more about them and Radio City away from the turntables. And we have all the lads, in actual fact, in the studio right now, all the DJs. We have Alan, we have Ian, and we have Ross, and not forgetting Paul. I don't know who's going to start off the conversation. I would explain to you that I'm in a different part of the studio and they're sort of just behind me and I can't really see what they're doing, but I'll switch up the switch, lads. Don't say anything naughty because you're on the air, okay? You're on. Who's going to start off the findings?
Alan.
Alan.
Alan. We've elected Alan.
Okay. Alan, well, let's...
Step forward, lad.
If I can fire the first question at you, Alan, a lot of people ask us how we sort of make it into commercial radio. Can we have a bit of, you know, your sort of past history, how you first came to the station? Because you've been with us, what, just over a year, haven't you?
About 14 or 15 months, yes. Good evening, by the way, good evening. How did I get into Radio City? Interesting question. Long time ago now. I think it started October 65, and I was listening to the station one day. I listened to the station quite a few months before I actually joined, and this charming young man came on the air and said, "We have a disc jockey vacancy. If you think you are suitable, please write in and send a tape." So I thought, well, I'll have a go. I would never get the job, but I might at least try. You know, there's no harm in trying. So I did try, sent in a tape, and three months later, I got a little letter saying, "You might possibly be suitable. Come out and have a go." So I did, and here I am.
Ian McRae has joined us. I wonder, Ian, if we can sort of pass, if we can pass on to you now, Ian.
Yes.
How do you think Prime Minister Wilson is taking this event to Radio City at the present time?
Well, as Prime Minister of your country, I have some very interesting forthright things to say, but I can't think of any.
The next DJ, who's sitting around our little round table in the newsroom at the moment, that's Paul Cramer. Now, I first met Paul in the London office, and he was just coming out to the station. Paul, how did this all come about?
He doesn't know.
How did it all come about? Well,
a few strings.
Well, let's have it. What were you doing before you joined Radio City, and what made you come into commercial radio?
You can't tell them that.
Well, for about 2 years, I worked with a film company, from anything as a sound recordist to a film director, and I sort of got in a bit of a rut with this job.
What was her name?
And I felt
rut.
Yes. He never stops, does he? And I thought, you know, I thought, commercial radio, yes, this is great. Let's have a bash at it.
I've been banging ever since.
So this was it, you know. And after an audition tape being sent in, they said, we'll go out for a trial.
And
so far I've never been off the station.
You're still on a trial.
I'm still on sixpence a day.
I think a piece of music now. And Ian has had the suggestion of playing a record, which I've always had to more or less tell disc jockeys, new disc jockeys, when they come out to the station, and they say, what records do we play, and we tell them what kind of format to play, but I always tell them that there is a certain record which they mustn't play, and that is the Fortunes singing You've Got Your Troubles, because this is a signal to our friends on shore that if we ever play this record, it means that either somebody is ill out here, very dangerously ill, or it means that something terrible has gone wrong and would we have help as soon as possible. Well, now, at one particular occasion, the person that I forgot to tell us about was Ian McRae, isn't that right?
Yeah.
And of course, Ian McRae comes on the air and says, right now, here's a Radio City Golden Order and plays the Fortunes You've Got Your Troubles. I sort of did my tiny nut and sort of went into the loo for about 2 hours. And
what a talking
but
about
nobody, that time. It, yeah. But nobody heard it. Nobody heard it. But
Good
Ian, I was seriously ill at the time.
Ian has got the idea that we should play it now. Is there any particular thing that you want to add to this, Ian?
Yes. I wouldn't mind a job, so if anyone's listening...
No, just the thought is there. We thought we'd play it, but make sure we must... reassure our friends ashore that nothing at present, at this stage, is drastically wrong. Tom is just a little bit sick, but nothing to worry about, right?
It seems incredible to me, and I'm going to put my own case forward first of all, if I might, because I'll probably get into trouble for saying this, but it seems ridiculous that in June of last year, when we had all the tragic events on Radio City, in June of last year, the police told me, and they told Mrs. Calvert, and they told her late husband, Reg, that they could do nothing about the men out here for the simple reason we were outside the police's jurisdiction. Now, how is it that 6 or 7 months later, the GPO now summons us and get away with it? They win the case by saying that we are within territorial waters. Now, if the police can't help us 6 or 7 months ago, You know, and they have still said that if the station is raided again, which is still quite possible, they still can't help us, but they can fine us £100 and they can shut us off the air. Now this to me, and I don't profess to be sort of politically minded, but this to me, there seems to be something definitely wrong with the British law system at the present time. And I think something which I never realised, in actual fact, ladies and gentlemen, is something that Ian McRae pointed out to me a few weeks ago now, but I never realised it. But what is it, Ian? You told me there's something like, everybody seems to think that in England it's just the place where there are pirate radio stations, but in actual fact, isn't this right? There are 300 pirate radio stations, in actual fact, in Europe at this present time.
That's right. We are no more pirates than they are. And this includes, we very often say, well, I love saying this, Vatican Radio is not in the agreement, neither is the complete American Armed Forces Network or the BBC-run British Forces Network. They are just as much pirating the airwaves as we supposedly are.
What about Ross? Ross isn't saying much. Ross, have you got any particular views? Although you haven't been in the country very long, you must have some kind of views that you want to put forward at this time.
Well, actually, I can only reiterate on what Alan and Paul have said. Being an outsider, in a way, I feel a little removed from the effects of this, but I think it just goes to show that the English people are getting more easily misled by people in higher places. I think it just goes to show that the English man's really losing his backbone if they can let this sort of thing happen. Because time after time, people have said, commercial radio is it. We all listen. It's great. It's fantastic. Yet nobody has yet been game enough outside the industry to stand up and say, we want commercial radio, and this to me is just signifies how much control the government has got over people's thoughts in England this day.
Very quickly, lads, we have 5.5 minutes time left. If I can just have a quick rundown of all the people who we'd like to sort of say thank you very much indeed for the people who have worked.
I haven't told you what I'm going to do yet.
I'd like to thank, first of all, of course, Mrs. Calvert. Say hi to her two daughters, Candy and Susan. Also in the London office, Jill and John Wildman, who do a lot of hard work, also the sales staff, and of course our very competent boatman, that's Freddie Downs, who's probably listening in. Probably see you tomorrow,
Cyril.
Fred.
Yeah.
And six of
cruises, Tom.
And Ray. Mr. and Mrs. Pine. Mr. and Mrs. Pine, who of course put up the DJs when, put up with them, I should say, at their house in Whitstable when the DJs come down for the night. And also, of course, not forgetting technicians Phil Perkins, Ian West, Graham Horn, Bill Price, and DJs, that's Alan, Ian, Paul, RWB, Adrian Love, and Eric Martin, who we haven't mentioned. Of course, Sam, our two lads who used to work out here as chefs, Leslie and Barry, who apparently are starting up a coffee bar in Whitstable.
Any jobs? Good luck to them, too.
Yes, indeed. Good luck to Barry and Leslie and their coffee bar, which they're setting up. We shall probably be coming into the coffee bar. Not for a cup of coffee, but for a job!
For a cup of tea, mate.
Oh!
I'm going to do.
Come on, Paul. We've got 1.5 minutes,
Paul,
I think, lads, to go.
Paul.
So, very quickly.
Paul hasn't told us what he's going to do yet.
Paul.
Come on, Paul, tell us. Astound us.
I haven't the vaguest notion of what I'm going to do.
Thank you, Paul. Back to you, Tom.
Okay.
I'm out of a job.
Okay. Well, thanks very much indeed, lads. This pile star, we should
have made it. We weren't going anywhere.
We should have made it 2 hours, in actual fact. It's 4 minutes before 12 midnight, ladies and gentlemen. I haven't rehearsed this. I don't know what to say. But for all the lads out here on Radio City, for us, at the present time anyway, the party really is over. And the time right now on Radio City, ladies and gentlemen, is exactly 12 midnight. So from Alan Clark.
Well, what can you say? Simply goodbye and many thanks to everyone. I've enjoyed my spell on Radio City and keep in touch, okay?
Paul Cramer.
Thank you, Tom. I'd like to say a very good night to everybody and thank them for a most enjoyable 10 months, and I hope that the listeners do something anyway to get us back on the air, because tomorrow morning, when you switch on, there'll be nothing on 299.
RWB.
Thanks very much, Tom, Paul, Alan, Ian, and everyone. I've had a great time. I've learned a terrible lot about what people can do under extreme conditions, and I've really enjoyed myself. I'm looking forward to something in the future. I don't know what at this stage. And for me, it's bye.
Ian McRae.
Well, just goodbye and good morning. And thanks for everything in the past. Been wonderful listeners. Without sounding too sentimental here, all the best of luck to you. And goodbye for now. We'd like to just very quickly, if I can here, Tom, perhaps, I know the other stations are listening to us right now. We'd like to sort of pass on any sort of goodbye messages, you know.
Sure.
We'll listen to them after we go off the air in a few minutes' time, okay?
So, fine.
Bye for now.
Right, well, many thanks indeed to all the lads. And, of course, our two technicians on duty at the moment, Graham
and also to Phil, and also our two DJs on shore at the moment, Adrian and Eric, and our other technicians, Bill and Ian West. For me, Tom Edwards, for the very last time on Radio City, it's a very good night to you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless, and thank you for being a marvellous audience. Good night, and goodbye.